Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends. With thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Well, hey there, friends. Hey, I've got a couple of pieces of good news for you. First, Lynn Jenkins is indeed alive. Yeah, and I know this for sure because he sent us a brand new Skeeter and Yancey story. And the second piece of good news, get this, we've got a brand new Skeeter and Yancey story. Oh, Chester's excited for this one. Look, he even brought along his Hogcat plushie. Oh, hell yeah, you can come too, Chester. Come on, friend, let's go on in. All right. Hey, you know, I was just at simplyscarypodcast.com, and I was thinking, this becoming a patron thing seems like a pretty good deal. Our whole catalog dating back to 2012, ad-free and available to download or stream and everything? Not bad. Just click the Patrons Area tab and you can get it all for as little as $5 a month. Anyhow, tonight we're joined by our old pal Lynn Jenkins, author of Call of the Tennessee Hogcat, Skeeter and Yancey vs. the Grays, Skeeter and Yancey Do Dallas, and tonight's story, Spirits Among the Mist. The mellow grocery store music that wafted down from the high ceiling gave James the impression of a barely conscious mariachi band that had gotten on the tequila the night before. Hell, he half expected to hear moans accompanying the high notes. He pushed his shopping cart along a wide aisle, gathering the essentials to stock up the bunkhouse for another 2 weeks. He and Yancey had only been in the store for a few minutes, and several ladies had very nearly fainted as James strutted past. Small wonder, what with him being decked out in his finest Western shirt, gray felt Stetson, form-fitting 501s, gator kicks, and a modest splash of Old Spice that sent out a subliminal message.
Ladies, the love boat has arrived.
Now, James hadn't given much thought to romance up till now. But after they'd saved Skeeter's niece from Old Scratch and his gang of nut jobs, Debbie Sanderson started showing up at the ranch for no reason in particular. And sure as eggs come out of the south end of a northbound chicken, her and Abe fell for each other like a couple of stray mutts sharing a plate of spaghetti. Hell, lately it seemed like James couldn't turn around without catching the two of them checking each other for ticks. Not wanting to be a sad, pathetic third wheel, he decided to start trolling. And what better place to cast out his bait than the produce department at Al's Food and Pet Supplies, catty-corner to Al's Tire Repair and Barbershop. It wasn't that he was looking for Miss Wright so much as Miss Wright now, and the pond was full, so to speak. The first thing he looked for was a wedding ring, of course. No ring. Check. Smile and nod. Most of her teeth. So far, so good. He was about to introduce himself when an intercom crackled and Al's distraught voice cut off the Spanish guitar solo.
Mrs. Dunham, your son is at it again.
James's quarry did an about-face and headed for the manager's office.
Missed it by that much, James thought. Next.
On the other side of the store, Yancey wandered down the aisle that was lined with vitamins, beauty aids, and feminine products that he usually avoided like a den of rattlesnakes. After checking two more items off Emily's shopping list, he smiled and rolled on. He hadn't been this happy since he got his Remington 700 back from the gunsmith with its new barrel, trigger, bipod, base, rings, and scope. About the only thing still original was the polished oak stock, and that was only because it was so damn purty. A whitetail's worst nightmare. He waited patiently while two old ladies that had parked their carts side by side in the middle of the aisle finished their week's gossip session. When all the world's problems had been solved, they moved on. Spinning his cart this way and that like he was leading Ginger Rogers across the dance floor, he paid no attention to his fellow shoppers, who had begun giving him a wide berth. He was especially unaware of the set of eyes that caught glances of him between the gaps in the boxes of ladies' unmentionables. The stalking eyes kept pace with him until they reached the end of the aisle. Yancey rounded the corner absentmindedly, trying to think of something that rhymes with tampons, when a cart came around the opposite corner and collided with his, making enough noise to turn heads.
"Why don't you watch where you're going, you damn redneck?"
a lady's voice scolded. Red-faced, Yancey started to apologize when the woman's laughter cut his apology short. "Dee Dee?" he said, still half-traumatized. "What are you doing here?" The woman stepped around her cart and gave Yancey a tight squeeze.
"I've been stalking you for the last 10 minutes, you senile old bastard. And what's with this get-up?"
She stepped back and looked him up and down.
"Do you not own a mirror?"
Yancey looked down at the holy t-shirt he had absentmindedly put on that morning. The baggy sweatpants would probably fall apart in the washing machine, and the tattered tennis shoes that looked like they had been used to stomp out a flaming bag of dog shit. Yancey smiled bashfully. "I guess I've been a little preoccupied." The strikingly beautiful woman that stood before him feigned disgust. Her sienna brown eyes narrowed.
"You haven't been hitting the bottle, have you?"
She was starting to sound like a mother hen. "No, mother, I haven't been hitting the bottle," he said, raising his hands passively. He hesitated. He hadn't seen Dee Dee since their college days, but she'd always been a friend he knew he could trust. "I just haven't been getting much sleep lately."
"What's wrong? You got a guilty conscience?"
Things had been all shits and giggles up to that point, but Yancey really could use a sympathetic ear.
"What's going on with you, Tannehill?"
Dee Dee asked, sensing that her old friend could use a sympathetic ear. So right there on aisle 7, between the protein shakes and snack cakes, Yancey told her about their trip to Dallas. A demon from hell possessing a body and taking that godforsaken shape, and how he blew the damn thing back to where it came from. "All's well that ends well, right?" But what Yancey hadn't told anyone, not even his old pal Skeeter, was that just before he pulled the trigger, the beast had looked at him. He must have been 400 yards away, but when it turned its head and looked at him with those white-hot glowing eyes, he had an overwhelming urge to drop his gun and run away. He felt his finger squeeze the trigger, but it was almost like it was someone else controlling him.
"Like a dream?"
Dee Dee asked. "If it was a dream, I haven't woken up yet." To Yancey's surprise, Dee Dee wasn't laughing or smirking or dialing 911 to send for the paddy wagon. You see, Dee Dee stands at the door. Yep, stands at the door, all one name, was a full-blooded Native American Navajo. And in her culture, there was nothing funny about the spirit world. Yancey's mind wandered back through the years to his first days as a wet-behind-the-ears freshman in college. Headstrong and cocksure, he was ready to take on the world and God help anyone who tried to stand in his way. By the second week, he was seriously thinking about tucking his tail between his legs and heading back to the farm, where the sheep didn't judge him for his thick Kentucky accent or his countrified choice of wardrobe. He had signed up for an English lit course, which had nothing to do with learning how to run a successful business. His only real reason for being there, and so far it looked like it was going to be one more on the long list of disappointments. Every day another spoiled rich kid would stand up in front of the class, introduce themselves, and brag about how rich their parents were. Most of the girls didn't even try to hide the fact that the only reason they were in the class was because it would look good to the beauty pageant judges. "What the hell have I gotten myself into?" Yancey wondered. And then, like a ray of sunshine on an otherwise shitty day, Dee Dee stands at the door, took center stage. The future industry leaders that sat on the front row, turned up collars on their matching polo shirts and turned up noses to match, stopped speculating on stock prices and took notice. The bleach blonde set that had paired up with the great and the good on the front row, showing the professor why they deserved A's even though they never cracked a book, closed their legs and listened with interest as this raven-haired beauty told a story more genuine than any of these self-centered pissheads had a right to hear. She began by telling about her great-great-great-grandfather, who had been conscripted to guide the U.S. Cavalry across the plains of Arizona and New Mexico. While they camped at Fort Sumner, the white men would gamble and drink or sleep through the night while her grandfather stood vigil at the gates of the fort, watching for raiding parties. Just before dawn on a cold winter's night, a band from the neighboring tribe attacked the fort. But her grandfather raised the alarm before the raiders reached the gate, and the white men, along with a handful of Navajo braves, fought off the raiding party. The garrison of 100 men had sustained less than a dozen casualties, and afterwards her grandfather was given a Medal of Honor, which he later traded for a rifle. A man after my own heart, Yancey thought. He was also given the name Stands at the Door. Years later, when his children were taken away and forced to go to school, they were assigned given names and Stands at the Door was adopted as their surname, and that explained that. She also told about the long walk, in which her ancestors were forced to walk more than 400 miles and held as prisoners at Bosque Redondo internment camp with almost no water or rations. By the time they were released and allowed to return to their ancestral land, 80% of the tribe had been wiped out. The room was silent. Somehow stock market prices and beauty pageants didn't seem quite so important. While Dee Dee had their undivided attention, she also explained that the Colorado River ran through their territory, providing her tribe with more than enough water to grow their crops, and her people had been prosperous. Then representatives of the white man's new government came with their empty promises and conned the tribal chiefs out of all but a ditch full of water. She met the eyes of the upper crust in the front row.
A travesty that has not been rectified to this day.
Even though Yancey sat closer to the back of the class, he still felt a cold chill run down his spine. In the weeks that followed, Yancey tried to get to know this amazing woman, but it seemed like just about every jock, computer nerd, politician's son, and stoner buzzed around her like a swarm of bees, trying to pollinate the first honeysuckle of spring. Yancey's prospects were looking pretty bleak, until fortune finally decided to take pity on him. You see, one day while Yancey was passing through one of the commons areas, he noticed a brightly colored poster on the notice board and stopped to read it. Meet and greet this Friday at the Omega Theta Pi House. Starts at 7 o'clock. No alcohol. Now, under other circumstances, Yancey wouldn't even consider going to a party without alcohol. But on second thought, there might be an off chance he could meet somebody who wasn't as phony as a prostitute's smile, and besides, what the hell else did he have to do on a Friday night? When he stepped out of the taxi in front of the Omega frat house and looked the place over, he almost climbed right back in the cab, telling the driver, "Home, James, and don't spare the horses." He had been expecting to see a bunch of half-naked kids dancing in the yard, throwing frisbees, smoking questionable cigarettes, and generally ignoring the no-alcohol rule. He'd at least be in his element if that were the case. But what he found instead made his blood run cold. Two young ladies stood at either sides of the gilded door that looked like it would be right at home keeping out the riffraff at Buckingham Palace. And the girls themselves looked like royalty that had gotten lost on their way to one of the king's balls. Yancey fastened the top button on his Best Western shirt and stepped up on the porch. After being given a name tag that read Clancy, even though he had told the girls twice his name was Yancey, he was shown to the refreshment table and left to fend for himself. He was just ladling out a cup of punch from a crystal punch bowl that probably cost more than the family farm when he heard a familiar voice ask,
"Care for an hors d'oeuvre?"
Yancey turned around and almost swallowed his tongue. It was her. He gurgled something that sounded like hello, and she smiled.
"Apparently it's not pronounced hors d'oeuvre. It's pronounced hors d'oeuvre,"
she said, sounding like an insect that crawled up her nose.
"Yancey, right?"
Yancey looked down at his misspelled name tag.
"They do that if they don't think you're Omega material. I'd take that as a compliment."
Yancey felt the tension drain. Dee Dee's ability to put people at ease was almost as impressive as her ability to make people check their privilege. "That's some beautiful beadwork," Yancey said, finally finding his voice.
"Thanks."
Her smile deepened as she ran her fingers over the intricate beadwork on the pouch that hung from a leather strap around her neck.
"This was my father's medicine pouch."
A few minutes later, they found themselves on a swing in the backyard, telling each other stories. Yancey about growing up on a sheep ranch and all the crazy shit he and his best friend Skeeter did to entertain themselves. And Dee Dee growing up on a reservation in Bryson, Arizona, and all the crazy shit her and her friends did. Their BS session would have gone on all night if the sprinklers hadn't kicked on and ran them out. Yancey made more friends when wrestling season started and eventually found his place in a big world. But he never felt closer to home than when he was with Dee Dee. When Yancey's dad passed away, Dee Dee gave him a cardboard box not much bigger than your average classroom textbook and told him not to open it till after the funeral. When his dad had been laid to rest, Yancey got home feeling like a wash rag that had been ran through the wringer. He sat on the couch fumbling with the box, almost opening it several times before giving in to temptation and looking inside. He hadn't shed more than a dozen tears at his dad's funeral. Not that he wouldn't miss the old man, but it had felt like a dream. Like he'd wake up and be back at college. Now the dam burst, and Yancey bawled like the first time he had watched Old Yeller. He pulled out a medicine pouch that was an exact copy of the one Dee Dee had often worn. Running his fingers over the blue diamond cholla that had been painstakingly crafted in tiny beads on the flap brought back fond memories of the Native American beauty that had taken pity on an out-of-place farm kid from Kentucky. Nothing would have pleased him more than to get in his truck and head back to college in Dee Dee. But, ready or not, he had a ranch to run. He'd be sure to send her a thank you note as soon as he had time.
"Earth to Yancey,"
Dee Dee said for the second time. Yancey blinked and 20-odd years flashed by.
"Sorry, I was just..."
"I know,"
Dee Dee said.
"Seeing you brings back a few memories, too."
She held up a small pink and blue box that she had fished out of his cart and said,
"Looks like someone's been up to the devil's business."
Yancey smiled sheepishly, pooched out his belly and rubbed it fondly.
"I think it might be twins."
Dee Dee pointed at his hands and said,
"I'm not seeing any jewelry."
Yancey inspected his hand before catching her meaning.
"Oh, well, I'm working on it."
Dee Dee froze him with that look that felt like an ice cube sliding down his spine.
"You know you've got a bad habit of letting good things slip away."
Yancey felt a pang of guilt that he hadn't felt in decades. He always meant to stay in touch, but the longer he put it off, the more awkward it got. Dee Dee watched him squirm, and then, just when he was about ready to fall to his knees and start begging for forgiveness, she smiled.
"Do you remember calling me your sister from another mother?"
"Yeah," he nodded.
"Well, I got two sisters that I haven't spoken to in years. That doesn't mean I don't love them."
And just like that, the guilt was gone, more or less. Dee Dee decided to steer the conversation towards something less depressing.
"Do you remember me telling you about my uncle's sweat lodge?"
"Yeah," Yancey nodded.
"Well, he's got one coming up, and it might be just what you need to help you with your bad dreams."
Yancey mulled it over. What were the chances of running into Dee Dee after all these years? What were the chances her uncle was about to do a sweat lodge? And what were the chances that Emily would let him go traipsing off halfway across the country with a maybe baby on the way?
"Yeah?"
He nodded again.
If what you said was true and you really did send the evil one back to the spirit world, then you're going to need some help.
Yeah, Yancey nodded for a fourth time.
My uncle will know what to do.
Yancey's head couldn't take another nod, so he pulled out his phone and asked her for her number. He punched it in as she gave it to him and then called it. When it rang, he hung up and added her to his contacts, and Dee Dee did likewise.
Okay, stands at the door, Yancey said with a playful smirk. Let me know when and where, and I'll make it happen.
Yancey was about to say his goodbyes and exit stage left when James strolled up looking like the pond had frozen over. Then he caught sight of Dee Dee and his jaw dropped. Yancey introduced the two of them, and James gurgled something that sounded like hello. Yep, Dee Dee still had it. After Yancey got the two of them acquainted, he took his exit and left the rest to fate. He went to the bakery and picked up the cake for Abe's birthday that was coming up, paid for the lot, and went out to wait in the truck for the Peruvian Casanova. 20 minutes later, James showed up, grinning like Cupid had used him for target practice. He bailed in, and the first words out of his mouth were,
Hey, boss, any chance I can borrow the truck this Saturday?
You got something to haul? Yancey asked, and the two of them stared at each other in silence. James was the first to break, and they laughed like a pack of hyenas being offered a bowl of vegetable soup. Then James confided,
I think I'm in love, dude.
Yancey's laughter tapered to a chuckle, and he said,
You never stood a chance, hermano. Hell, that woman could make the Pope cross his legs.
So you're okay with me and her? You know.
Yancey didn't know what James and Dee Dee had talked about, but he reassured him that they had never been anything more than friends. Besides, who was he to stand in the way of true love?
You ain't heard about Moto Casino?
Moto has real Vegas slots. Any game you can find on the floor in Vegas, you can play it on Moto.
I like my slots hot. Moto's free to play, like food stamps. In line at the grocery store, at a funeral, in traffic. Keep your eyes on the road. Hop on Moto Casino. Moto Casino got jackpots that are bigger than my belly. Moto, America's hottest free-to-play social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today. Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Yancey and the brothers had been helping Skeeter raise a new barn, since the last one that had been standing since the Nixon era just about didn't survive the heavy snowfall that winter. Even though none of them had much carpentry experience, Skeet figured if some old Amish bloke showed up and looked the thing over, he'd probably say something like, "Not bad for a bunch of beginners." Since today was Abe's birthday, the tools were put away early and everyone headed up to Skeet's hacienda for what he called barbecue cow parts. Since Lana and Emily started getting together in the kitchen, their Saturday barbecues had turned into four-course feasts that usually ended in an afternoon siesta. Everyone jockeyed for position around the picnic table, and Lana brought Abe's cake out of the back door, with about half a dozen candles all lit up. Everyone started singing happy birthday in whatever key they could manage, and she sat it down on the table in front of them. Happy birthday, little bandito, was written in gold letters on the black frosting, which didn't make much sense to Abe. People had been calling him that all week, but if that was going to be his new nickname, so be it. He'd been called a lot worse. He made a wish for world peace, plenty of rain, and a new bottom E string for his guitar, and blew out the candles. Since this was a special occasion, Skeet's cow parts were actually marinated ribs and ribeyes that had been slow cooking all morning. Now, I don't know if you've ever tried carrying on a conversation whilst chawing down a mouthful of ribs, but Yancey can testify, it ain't easy.
Hey, Skeet,
he mumbled between mouthfuls.
Leave me alone, I'm eating,
Skeet growled. After chewing for a minute, Yancey asked,
Do you think this is chewed up enough to swallow?
And opened his mouth, revealing a slimy ball of red meat.
I hope so,
Skeet said, looking it over.
I ain't giving you no Heimlich maneuver.
Pure class,
Emily said, passing Lana a bowl of salad.
Typical behavior for men who peaked mentally at 14.
Lana said, shooting Skeet a look of disgust. Thinking fast, Yancey said, if you don't like it, you shouldn't cook so good. Skeet agreed, not giving his gnawing jaws a moment's rest. Yancey wiped the drool off his chin and cleared his throat. You remember years ago me telling you about D.D. stands at the door? Skeeter, better known as Mr. Tactful, swallowed and said,
You mean the smoking hot girlfriend from college?
Friend, Yancey corrected. Emily's ears pricked up. Anyway, I ran into her the other day in the store. Now Yancey could feel Emily's stare boring a hole through his head. Skeet whirled his ear of corn as a gesture to continue. Well, her uncle is some high-up Navajo medicine man, and he's doing a sweat lodge in a couple of weeks. Skeet sucked a kernel out of his teeth whilst giving Yancey a no-shit look. If these delicate little prairie flowers can survive without us for a few days, what do you say we check it out? Skeet wiped the sauce, butter, dressing, beer, and slobber off his gob.
And what tribe did you say she was from?
This was already more interest than Yancey had expected. She's Navajo, Yancey said. I can't remember which clan she's from.
The Kenya Anai, James said.
When all eyes turned to James, he beat back a shit-eaten grin and said,
That's my girlfriend you're talking about.
A little premature, Yancey thought, but James was beaming like a 4-foot LED light bar, so Yancey shot him an encouraging thumbs up. Skeet wiped a honey glaze out of his eyebrow thoughtfully and said,
As far as I know, the Shawnee and Navajo never had any conflicts.
Yancey looked at his old buddy like he had a third nard sprouting out of his forehead.
What? You didn't know I was part native? Hell, you probably ought to look into your own genealogy, tenderfoot. You might be surprised.
Yancey had never given two shits about what kind of soup he had running through his veins. But now that he thought about it, it might be kind of interesting to find out. Skeet mowed through another row of corn, then used his tongue like a squeegee to mop the butter off his face, with a stack of napkins within reaching distance. Lana had seen enough. Grabbing a napkin, she squoze his cheeks and turned his head to face her.
Hold still,
she said as he struggled to get free. She spat on the napkin, which made him struggle all the harder.
Take it like a man,
Abe said.
Yeah, dog, don't be such a wimp,
James howled.
Turn the hose on him,
Yancey said, words he would later regret. Suddenly, the raucous crowd was struck silent. Even Lucy Bell, who had been grazing in the north pasture, watched with interest.
That can't be healthy,
Yancey said with a sour expression. James turned away, pretending to retch, and Abe hollered,
Get a room!
As for Skeet, well, Skeet had melted like the butter on his chin. Not an ounce of fight left in him. Lana's lips pressed into his in a cacophony of smacks and slurps. As they shared in the ecstasy of barbecued bliss, Yancey noticed that Emily was practically swooning at the sight of the two lovers embroiled in redneck rapture. Seeing the opportunity for a little bow-chicka-wow-wow of their own, he grabbed a rib with a healthy slathering of sauce and smeared his mouth, then waited for Emily to notice the not-so-subtle invitation. Skeeter and Lana ended their romantic interlude by wiping the slobber from each other's faces. Then Skeet turned and noticed the smear of barbecue sauce on his old buddy's face and the fact that Emily wasn't giving him the time of day. He raised his arms in a come-get-some gesture, saying,
All right, pal, there's plenty of Skeeter sauce for everybody.
Emily shot Yancey a sideways glance.
Why don't you have Didi wipe it off?
She said frostily.
I was just kidding about the girlfriend thing,
Skeet said with enough guilt in his voice to brown a rat.
That's okay, pal,
Yancey said with enough sorrow in his voice to drown two rats.
I think I'll go take a cold shower.
Skeeter, James, and Abe watched with sympathy as Yancey heaved a discouraging sigh and pooched out his bottom lip for the birds to shit on. Lana, sensing there was more going on than some lover's quarrel, kept a suspicious eye on Emily. Emily stealthily scooped out a slice of banana cream pie into the palm of her hand. Her eyebrows danced as she sent Lana a devious smile.
Oh, all right,
she said in a calm before the storm tone.
Here's a smooch for you.
Yancey turned to her with unexpected speed and thrust a handful of cold whipped cream down the front of her shirt. Taken off guard, she squealed and pushed the pie into his face. For her part, Lonnie yanked off Skeet's ball cap and smeared a handful of gravy into his hair. Skeet pointed at Yancey, laughing despite the stream of gravy running down his own face. Yancey scooped the last few ribs out of the pan and yelled defiantly,
"Oh yeah? Well, at least I ain't covered in barbecue sauce."
Then hurled the murky remains. His heart sank with instant regret when Skeeter ducked and Lana didn't. She was engulfed in a brown tsunami. Skeet threw his legs over the bench and stood. He backed away from his beloved, who sat quivering with her mucked-up face buried in her hands. It was impossible to tell if she was laughing or crying, but Skeet knew a sensitive comment was called for. So he cleared his throat and pronounced,
"Damn, dollface! You look like you got shot at and missed, and shit at and hit."
Lana peeled her face away from her hands, drew in a deep breath, and let out a battle cry that would have made Geronimo proud.
"Food fight!"
She started by slinging a handful of potatoes at Yancey that caught him square in the puss. At even that score, all hell broke loose, with everyone joining in except James, who, being a pacifist by nature, rolled up like an armadillo in gator country and tried to stay unnoticed. When things went quiet, he cracked his shell open and looked up. Big mistake. He was surrounded. If anyone asked him what it was like to be shit on by an elephant, after today he could describe the experience in finite detail. Splat, plop, whoosh, repeat. When the dust had settled, it was hard to tell who had gotten the worst of it. Abe had birthday cake smeared into his usually perfectly slicked back hair. James was pretty much unrecognizable, and the ladies looked like, well, they were still pretty damn sexy, in a lady mud wrestler sort of way. Nobody noticed when Debbie rounded the corner of the house.
"Sweet baby Jeebus,"
she hollered.
"I didn't hear anything about a tornado touching down around here."
Yancey scooped up a handful of cake and chased her across the yard. It was like watching a 50-year-old tortoise chasing a 30-year-old rabbit. Debbie had to slow down to keep it interesting.
"Too many years and too many beers, old man," Skeet taunted.
"Mind your blood pressure,"
Emily threw in. Finally, Yancey gave up and sauntered back to the table, sucking wind like an auctioneer with asthma.
"I gotta get my ass in shape," he admitted, more to himself than to Skeeter, who didn't know whether to keep laughing or feel sorry for the old bastard. In the end, he kept laughing. No one noticed that Lana had disappeared. Now she was back, dragging the garden hose. A blast of cold water hit Skeet square in the face, but instead of ducking for cover, he raised his hands like a devout parishioner when the pastor asked for an amen. Lana sprayed indiscriminately, washing away the refuse of a well-fought battle before turning the hose on herself. Emily retreated to the house to be the first one in the shower. Yancey, followed by James, Abe, and Skeeter, walked around the house to the sun-drenched front lawn and sprawled out to let the afternoon sun bake them dry. "I've still got frosting in my ear,"
Abe said, pushing it in further with his finger.
"I think I've got something up my nose, dude," James snorted. "I think it's either a carrot or a pea." "Well, I've still got gravy dripping down the crack of my ass,"
Skeet said, trumping everybody. Now it was Yancey's turn. Sure, he had pie in his belly button, mashed potatoes in both ears, and who knows what the hell that was trickling down his pants. But since everyone was waiting to hear what he had to say, he decided there would be no better time to unburden his conscience than now. He sat up and felt something squelch where things shouldn't be squelching.
"Listen, feller," he said, trying to ignore that squishy feeling. "I've got something to say."
"It's better to burn out,"
Skeet wailed, raising a fist.
"Than to fade away."
They all joined in, including Yancey. But no, seriously, he said, trying to stifle their enthusiasm. There's something that I haven't been totally honest about with y'all. Now things are getting serious. James and Abe put away their air guitars and did their best to focus.
Let me guess,
Skeet said, in almost complete seriousness.
When we went to Dallas last year to find Debbie, just before you took that shot that sent Satan back to hell, or wherever he disappeared to, he looked at you like he was staring into your soul.
And you've been having nightmares ever since, Abe finished.
Damn, dog, I was way off, James laughed. I thought you were going to say you've been trying your girl's lingerie or something.
How did you know? Yancey asked. Skeeter, not James.
You should keep your curtains closed,
James snickered. Yancey rolled his eyes.
I meant about the dreams.
I think it's pretty obvious, Skeet said with a lighthearted smirk. You told Emily, and she wrote an article in the Lexington Post.
Yancey narrowed his eyes. Skeet grinned.
She told us because she was worried about you, shit biscuit.
Any thought Yancey might have had about being mad at Emily evaporated.
Damn, boss. I'd be shitting my britches if El Diablo look at me, James said.
Nightmares or no, amigo. You got el grande cojones in my book.
Abe held up his hands like he was holding a couple of bowling balls.
Muy grande. That's why he walks bow-legged,
Skeet said, spreading his legs to emphasize the reference. As good as it made him feel to hear everyone exaggerate the size of his love spuds, Yancey needed to get the conversation back on track.
Listen, Skeet, the reason I want to do this sweat lodge is because Dee Dee thinks her uncle might be able to help me control these dreams. I don't think I could take many more nights like I've been having.
Don't worry, pal, Skeet reassured him. You'll be sleeping like a freckle on a baby's nose in no time.
About that time, Deb came strolling down the sidewalk and asked,
Are you big, strong men going to let us women clean up that mess all by our little old selves?
That was the signal. James and Abe went to help Yancey off the ground.
Get away from me,
he growled, swiping James's hand away.
I ain't that old.
Skeet sent Abe to the shop to get a push broom, and when he was about halfway across the yard, Lana and Emily stepped out the door, and they all quietly followed him to the shop. The lights flickered on, and Abe walked to the back wall where the broom hung on the pegboard. When he turned around, the garage door was opening, and everyone stood in the doorway looking like ice cream wouldn't melt if they had a mouthful. He knew this couldn't be an intervention, seeing as how Skeeter and Yancey both put away more beer than him. He started walking toward them when Skeeter stopped him in his tracks.
Did you park this pile of scrap out here?
Pointing at something in the middle of the building with a black car cover draped over it. Abe hadn't even noticed the thing on his way in. Now he started suspecting something was up.
No, boss,
he said, holding back a smile.
This piece of junk isn't mine.
Well, it is now,
Skeet said, while Debbie peeled off the sheet. Everyone broke into a second chorus of happy birthday. Suddenly, Abe knew what it must feel like to be the winning contestant on Deal or No Deal. Not quite as good as his wish for world peace, but pretty damn close. Just to make sure he wasn't dreaming, he reached out and put his hand on the hood. Yep, it was a no-shit 77 Pontiac Trans Am. Black with gold pinstripe, Thunder Chicken on the hood. Hell, it even had the T-tops. Now the little bandito thing made sense. The closer he looked, the more he noticed little flaws. A scratch here, a dent there. He did a quick calculation and decided if he started growing his snot strainer right now, it should be grown out just about the same time the restoration was done. The grin on his face might never wear off.
How did you guys know?
Skeet pointed at James.
You watch that stupid movie every weekend, bro.
Debbie threw Abe the keys and slid into the passenger seat. Abe looked at Skeet for reassurance.
See what this bitch will do,
Skeet hollered. Abe brought all 185 horses to life and everyone stood back. Yancey gave him the universal signal to light him up. Abe stepped on the loud pedal and the car shot forward like it was being launched off an aircraft carrier. Skeeter clapped a hand on Yancey's shoulder, eyes watering in the cloud of carbon monoxide and tire smoke.
She's running a little rich.
Never mind that,
Yancey hollered, still feeling the exhilaration of raw horsepower being unleashed.
Did you see the look on his face?
I said it before and I'll say it again, partner. Life ain't bad.
The next morning, Yancey was up with the chickens, stretching, yawning, farting, and scratching as he crossed the porch and stepped down onto the driveway.
It's 2 miles to Brent Bastion's house, so 4 miles round trip, he thought. So about 30 minutes there and back. 35 if I stop to piss.
An hour later, Yancey came dragging his wore-out carcass back up the driveway, looking like the walking dead. The next day, after the pain meds kicked in, he scrounged his old bench press, free weights, and heavy bag out of the barn and packed them over to the old willow tree, which was a workout in itself. By the day of the big trip, Yancey had cut his time to Brent's house and back in half, and the heavy bag knew it had been in a fight. He wasn't down to his old wrestling weight yet, but he was getting there. Of course, the best part was that he couldn't walk in the house without Emily frisking him, like a security guard at the White House, and him with a suspicious bulge in his pants. Dee Dee had made all the arrangements, and her uncle was looking forward to meeting the five-fingered being that had done battle with the evil one, as he put it. Oh yeah, in case you were wondering, Dee Dee and James had hit it off, and were already tighter than 3 fingers up a bull's ass. FYI. If you ever get a hankering to find out how tight that is, my advice is to be on the other side of a very strong fence. Skeeter and Lana came pulling up the driveway, and Yancey threw his suitcase in the back before he and Emily climbed in the back seat. Since they wouldn't be taking any guns or stabbing utensils on this trip, they decided to take the direct route.
To the airport, James, and don't spare the horses. Yancey ordered, curling his upper lip like he had been weaned on a pickle.
Never being one to shy away from a challenge, Skeet gave it the beans, and 20 minutes later they were parked outside Terminal 7. Lana's knuckles turned pink again, and she released her death grip on the old shit handle.
From now on, I drive in the city,
she said in a shaky voice.
I don't know who deserves their ass kicked worse, you or the dumbass that gave you your license.
License?
Skeet looked confused. They all bailed out and congregated on the sidewalk. Taking Emily in his arms, Yancey said,
It's not goodbye, my dear. It's just au revoir.
What's that?
Skeeter asked.
One of those fancy toilets that spray water up on your hoo-ha?
While it couldn't be said that Yancey had an all-out phobia about flying, given a choice, he'd rather keep his feet on good old terra firma. I think the term is nervous flyer. So to compensate, he downed a half a bottle of cold medicine before boarding. And somewhere between Denver and Las Vegas, he started snoring so loud, people started looking out the windows to see if an engine was on fire. As the plane started its descent, a shutter rolled down the cabin and then bucked gently as they dropped through the clouds, kind of like when a horse slows down from a gallop to a trot. Yancey tempered his breathing and stood stock still. He held the bead of the open sight 4 inches above the target. With the butt of the rifle tied against his shoulder, he gently squeezed the trigger. A black plume rose, and the earth began to shake. The churning vortex turned in upon itself and was sucked down. Suddenly, the earth opened beneath his feet. 8 circles of hell rushed past. He saw the fiery furnace that waited below rushing up to meet him. Closer. Closer.
Ah!
Here's golf legend John Daly.
Hell yeah, these wins are piling up faster than my divorces.
I only spent on Moto, America's social casino. You know I've won a couple of majors. And on Moto, I've won majors, grands, and epic jackpots on their classic Vegas slots with huge, huge bonus rounds. Moto Casino adds new games and awards players free coins every single day. Grip it and spin it on Moto Casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.
Moto Casino is a social casino. Void where prohibited. No purchase necessary. Visit Moto.us for more details.
Moto Casino. America's social casino.
Yancey sat up with a jolt. After a few deep gasps, the realization that it had been just a dream combined with Skeet's reassuring words.
Whoa, you crazy bastard! You almost gave me a heart attack!
Calmed his nerves and he sat back. Feeling the eyes of the other passengers bearing down on him, Skeeter stood and said with a passable smile,
Nothing to worry about, folks. Just a bad dream.
When Ski sat down, Yancey leaned closer and said, This better work. By the grace of God, Yancey thought, the plane landed safely. They wandered to the baggage carousel and bellied up to the car rental counter. Yancey told the service attendant he had a car reserved. Emily had actually reserved a car, but Yancey was sure she would have picked out something nice. The young lady scrolled down her screen.
Let me see. Yancey Tannehill. Here we are.
She looked over the screen and shot him a courteous thank you for saving the planet look.
The baby blue Prius hybrid.
What did you say?
Skeet snarled, ready to kill the next person who said hybrid. There'd been some kind of mistake, Yancey said, trying to avoid bloodshed. We reserved
the Mustang, Skeet said. The fastest one you've got.
Slightly crestfallen, the young lady looked through the inventory.
Was it the Shelby convertible?
She asked disapprovingly.
That's the one,
Skeet said, not giving a second thought to the fact that it was going on Yancey's credit card.
You probably ought to go for the extra insurance, too.
Yancey set his jaw and signed the contract. Rolling past the Flagstaff City Limits sign, Yancey dropped the hammer and their heads sank into the headrests.
Now we're talking hyperspace!
Skeeter squealed and Yancey forgot all about the price. A little while later, they pulled up to the Tourist Info Center on the outskirts of Bryson. So this is where Dee Dee grew up, Yancey thought. It doesn't look that different from Kentucky. Except for all the sagebrush and cactus and the red dirt and buttes. Come to think of it, it didn't look anything like Kentucky, but the desert had a beauty all its own. After getting their bearings, they wound their way through the streets of Bryson and eventually found themselves cruising the main drag of a smaller and much older town, nestled in the borough of a bigger town.
You sure you didn't take a wrong turn, partner?
Skeet asked, taking in the sights.
This looks like the set of a Clint Eastwood movie.
Yancey thought that summed it up just about right.
Hey, look, there's the bank.
Skeet pointed at a time-weathered building on his side.
Jackson Mercantile. Silver Strike Hotel. Holy shit, Cassie Saloon.
Skeet about jumped out the car, hollering,
We gotta go! We gotta go!
There'll be time. Yancey promised. Right now we need to find Dee Dee's uncle. Just then, a couple of kids that couldn't have been more than 7 or 8 ran out of the bank onto the wood plank sidewalk, shooting at each other with their fingers.
I'll tell you what, partner,
Skeet said, trying to hold back his inner 7-year-old.
2 days ain't near long enough to see this place.
They rounded the corner at a dilapidated water tower and were back in the 21st century. There it is, Yancey said, pulling up a rutted driveway. A shaggy mutt that had to have been at least 3 breeds rolled into one crawled out of its doghouse and casually sauntered down the driveway, barking occasionally like its heart really wasn't in it. An elderly gentleman stepped out onto the porch as Skeeter and Yancey got out of the car. The old dog took to licking Skeet's hand like it was covered in gravy. The old man yelled something, obviously in his native language, and the mutt sauntered back up the driveway and found a shady spot to lay down.
Welcome to my home,
the old man said. reaching out a hand while Yancey was still several steps away. Yancey closed the distance and shook his hand.
I'm Yancey, Mr. Stands at the Door.
And Demon Slayer,
the old man said.
It is a great honor.
Yancey stammered.
Well, thank you.
Skeet reached out a hand, saving Yancey any more embarrassment.
Skeeter Bowling, Mr. Stands at the Door.
We have heard a lot about you.
Again, the old man said something that sounded cool, but was completely beyond their understanding.
You are welcome in my home,
he clarified.
And you can call me Wally.
Okay, Wally it is.
Skeeter and Wally looked like they might have grabbed their clothes out of the same closet that morning. Western shirts, Levi's, and cowboy boots. What set them apart was that the old man's silver-streaked hair was pulled back into a braid, and a red bandana was pulled down to his eyebrows. A long two-strand turquoise necklace hung around his neck, and silver with turquoise inlay bracelets covered his wrists. Yancey studied the man and could see a definite resemblance to his niece.
These Navajo are a handsome race, he thought.
They packed their bags into the house and were just making themselves comfortable when a man walked in, bold as a set of brass monkey nuts, and said,
I thought I saw a couple of white guys drive up here.
Sounding eerily similar to someone sitting not a million miles away, Yancey thought.
We prefer the term paleface,
Skeet said, and stood to greet the man who could almost be described as his doppelganger.
Skeeter Bowling.
Duncan Big Horse.
They met in the middle of the living room, acting like they had known each other their whole lives. Then Skeeter turned and said,
Duncan, I'd like to introduce.
Duncan repeated the phrase that Wally had said earlier.
The Demon Slayer.
Yancey stood to shake his hand.
Yancey, he said. Not the Demon Slayer,
he wanted to say, but he just nodded.
Listen, fellers, I gotta tell you something.
He was getting used to making this speech.
All I did was pull a trigger. It ain't like I killed the bastard with my bare hands.
Not this time, Duncan said.
Wally sprang up and stood between them.
We can discuss this later,
he said, pushing an elbow into Duncan's ribs.
There is much to be done before the ceremony.
The four men sat on Wally's back porch, drinking sage tea while Skeeter told their new friends about the events leading up to Yancey's dance with the devil. Then Yancey finished the story.
So you see,
he was about to say that he was no hero when Duncan cut him off.
Your bravery was tested.
He paused to let the words sink in.
You were compelled to drop your gun. The evil one has the power to make men, even strong-willed men, do his bidding. That is why you have been brought to us,
Wally said, shaking a crooked finger at both Skeeter and Yancey.
Brought to you? Yancey asked. There are forces at work that the five-fingered beings cannot understand.
Wally spoke in his native tongue again.
You both have a significant part to play.
So why us?
Skeeter asked.
An over-the-hill cowpoke and a sheep herder from Podunk, Kentucky.
When you think of almost all religious teachings, who were the ones called on to serve the Great Spirit?
Wally put his hands together.
Being close to Mother Earth gives us spiritual strength, as well as physical strength.
Damn, Skeet thought. This guy really knows his shit.
The lessons turned into more of a BS session until the sun went down and Skeeter and Yancey were shown to a spare bedroom. Before dawn the next morning, two young boys, not much older than the ones they had seen in town the day before, climbed up in the back of Wally's old pickup, and Skeeter and Yancey followed them down a red dirt road that led out of town. After a couple of miles of getting their skeletons rearranged, they pulled off the road and stopped. They climbed out of the car and were about to give each other a "what the hell are we doing here" look when two other men, maybe in their mid-20s, stepped out of a low opening of an earthen mound that was all but invisible against a towering butte in the distance. The younger boys dropped the tailgate, and Skeeter and Yancey pitched in to pack four good-sized logs and place them around the fire pit that they were surprised to see was already burning.
"These two are our fire tenders, Malcolm and Jacob Tapahansel,"
the four men exchanged greetings.
"And these two,"
Duncan pointed at the two boys,
"are learning the old ways, even if it kills them. Baldwin Sassy."
The taller boy extended a hand and said,
"What's shaking, eggs and bacon?"
The other boy shook Skeeter's hand, saying,
"Nice to know you, Gorgonzola."
The words no more than got past the boy's lips when Skeet shot back,
"What's going on, Cheech and Chong?"
Apparently, this met the boy's approval. They looked at Yancey expectantly. Yancey returned a deer-in-the-headlights look, then stammered,
"Give me some skin, Gunga Din."
The taller boy, Baldwin, shook his head.
"Needs work."
And the younger boy asked,
"Who's Gunga Din?"
"Look it up later, Max," Duncan said. "The sun's about to come up. These guys are practicing to be rappers."
"Yeah, we're gonna be famous,"
Baldwin said, as if it was just a matter of time. Max reached through the window of the truck and took out a tom-tom. Everyone stood facing the east, and Wally recited a prayer of thanks as the sun rose out of the horizon. The boys chanted in steady rhythm with the beat of the tom-tom. Prayers were offered to the south, west, and north, and invitations to the Holy Ones to join them in the day's ceremony. Yancey took off his bathrobe as they prepared to enter the sweat lodge. Suddenly, the boys burst into laughter, and Wally stepped up quickly to help Yancey put his robe back on. Duncan unwrapped a towel that covered his midsection, revealing instead of nature's handiwork, a pair of white gym shorts. Wally disrobed, also sporting a pair of shorts. Yancey felt like he needed to sit down before he passed out from embarrassment.
"Dee Dee told us,"
he stammered, recalling her humorless expression when she told him that all the ceremonies in the male sweat lodge were done in the nude.
"Trust me,"
she said.
"No one would look at you twice."
She was right. Once was enough. Even Skeeter laughed, even though he didn't have a stitch on under his robe either. Luckily, they brought swimming trunks, just in case the desert heat got the best of them. Yancey dropped the top on the car, and they scrounged the trunks out of their suitcases.
"She got you good, old man,"
Skeet laughed. Now that the sting of embarrassment had worn off, Yancey had to admit it was a good one. Now that everyone was dressed appropriately, Skeet, Yancey, the tribal elder, and the medicine man ceremoniously entered the sweat lodge. Skeet, Yancey, and Duncan sat down around the fire pit, while one by one Wally was passed seven glowing hot rocks through the opening on a pitchfork. The rocks, that they called grandfathers, were placed in the pit. Wally sat down and the entrance was covered, plunging the men into darkness. The cleansing ceremony began. When the first round ended, the entrance was opened and closed four times, and the four men emerged. As Skeeter and Yancey would learn throughout the day, many of the beliefs in the Navajo religion revolved around the number four. Four worlds, four states of being, four seasons, and so on. By a strange coincidence, Yancey had had an overwhelming urge from a young age to count in fours, touching things four times, tapping each of his fingers four times. Hell, four was even his lucky number. More prayers, more songs. They drank their fill of water, and it was back in the sweat lodge for round two, the healing ceremony. This time, there were 14 grandfathers in the fire pit. Water was poured on them, and a cloud of steam rose up. Before long, Skeeter and Yancey were getting their sweat on, and Wally's words, combined with the steady rhythm of the tom-tom, began forming pictures in Yancey's mind. He had expressed concern to Wally the day before that he wouldn't be able to remember the majority of Wally's teachings. Duncan passed Yancey some of Mama's fried bread and said,
"Even crazy-ass white guys can remember Wally's teachings."
Now Yancey marveled as Wally's words became seeds that planted themselves deep in his subconscious. This was the beginning of the journey the Dene called the Beauty Way Path. Another respite, and the two crazy-ass white guys were prepared for the third round. Didi had vaguely alluded to this ceremony. Skeeter and Yancey steeled themselves as they re-entered the sweat lodge for round three, the hurtin'. More grandfathers were placed in the pit and the steam hung in the air as the ceremony began. You know the old saying, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas? Well, the same can be said for what happens in the hurtin' ceremony. Suffice it to say, it's definitely a life-altering experience. Skeeter and Yancey came out of the lodge feeling both enriched for the experience and thankful it was behind them. More prayers, more chants, more water, and it was time for the big payoff. Not that the whole experience wasn't worth the trip. The four men entered the sweat lodge in a lighthearted mood, juxtaposed to the previous round. Duncan even told how he would go home and call out to his wife and two daughters as he walked through the front door, "Damn ya, dern ya, dang ya." And they'd all yell back from different places in the house, "We're busy." Of course, Skeet couldn't resist telling Duncan about his three cousins, quick, fast, and muy rápido. When the crickets started chirping, Skeet hit him with the punchline,
"I'm pretty sure muy rápido was adopted."
Funny thing was, Duncan didn't laugh. Round four, the truth sweat. These were the life lessons Yancey had been hoping for. These teachings were deeply personal, and as the sweat poured from Yancey's body, his mind began to wander. He watched as a fine mist rose off the desert floor. The day was sweltering. The afternoon sun beat down relentlessly. In the distance, an image appeared in the haze. As it slowly came into focus, Yancey's heart raced. This was his animal spirit. It seemed to be standing on its hind legs. A bear, his heart beat faster with anticipation. The mist cleared and the image came into focus. Yancey's heart slowed. It was no bear. Two other creatures rose and stood alongside the taller one. His offspring, Yancey deduced. A hand on his shoulder brought him back from the spirit world.
"This ain't no time for an afternoon nap, pard," Skeet said. "We're out."
Duncan and Wally were just getting up.
"But wait," Yancey said.
Wally and Duncan sat back down on the soft sheepskins. Yancey's pride was screaming at him to take his vision to the grave without telling a soul. But the new, more humble Yancey spoke up. He didn't come all this way just to go home with more questions.
"I think I saw my animal spirit," he said, half expecting to be laughed out of the sweat lodge. "You either saw your spirit animal or you didn't," Duncan said. "Tell us what you saw."
Yancey prepared himself for a hazing and said full-voiced,
"It was a prairie dog."
To his surprise, the lodge was silent. Then Duncan asked,
"Are you sure it wasn't the majestic mountain lion or the mighty bear?"
"No, it was just a prairie dog,"
Yancey said, his embarrassment growing.
"One big one and a couple of little ones, actually."
Wally and Duncan smiled, with no hint of sarcasm.
"You have young ones on the way,"
Wally said, just as sure as if he had read it in the newspaper.
Twins?
Yancey felt the lodge spin.
"How do you..."
Wally's laughter drowned out the question.
"A five-fingered being may be guided by several spirit animals during his lifetime, depending on what he requires help with. If you ever watched the prairie dog interact with its young, you would know that you don't need the size of the mountain lion or the strength of the bear to be a noble being. Love, patience, understanding, and sacrifice. The prairie dog will help you with these things.
In a rare moment of solemnity, Duncan added, "Your children will be blessed to have you as their father." Yancey came out of the sweat lodge feeling reborn. Baldwin held out Skeeter's robe, and Skeet said,
"Mind blown, chicken bone."
He'd been waiting to use that one. Max handed Yancey his robe and waited expectantly.
Make it happen, Cap'n.
Max shook his head in disgust. The men and boys gathered around the outside fire that was starting to die down to finish the ceremony and give thanks to the holy people for their communion. No one noticed at first when the smoke began to billow up and the embers crackled and popped. The prayer stopped when the earth began to tremble. The flame suddenly rose up and a shower of sparks spewed out of the pit.
"This isn't part of the ceremony," Duncan said, panic raising in his voice.
Everyone struggled to keep their feet under them as they backed away from the fire. Suddenly, the pit erupted in dazzling technicolor as a magnificent Palomino stallion emerged from the flames. A piercing battle cry came from the spectral warrior that sat astride the great beast. Duncan and the two tenders broke and ran for the truck, while Skeeter and Yancey and the two young boys made for the car. Wally held his walking stick over his head in an effort to distract the warrior spirit, but neither the powerful wraith nor his steed paid him any heed. The warrior's hand rose high, and a spear appeared from the ether. In the next instant, the battle-hardened warrior let slip the spear and raised his hand again for another spear to materialize out of thin air. Max and Baldwin bounced in the back seat.
"Give her snooze, pickle juice,"
one of them shouted.
"Let her rip, Tater Chip,"
the other boy's terror-stricken voice squeaked. The Mustang was already backing away from the terrifying scene at full throttle. Yancey watched over his shoulder, deftly guiding the speed machine onto the road. He threw the car into drive and turned to face forward. His heart damn near jumped out of his chest when he saw a 6-foot spear sticking up out of the hood right in front of him. He held back the comment he was about to make just in case the boys hadn't heard the more colorful side of the English language yet. Yancey checked the mirror, but all he could see was the dust cloud they had churned up. He gave up on trying to avoid the potholes as the speedometer steadily climbed. The old part of town was coming up fast. Yancey tried to remember which turns to take to get them through town. Without consciously thinking about it, his brain came up with a plan. Get through town, hit the highway, burn rubber back to Flagstaff, and find a police station. After that, they'd just have to play it by ear. Yancey stabbed the brakes as the first buildings blurred past.
"That way!"
Skeet pointed to the right, apparently with the same idea. Things were starting to look familiar. They hung a left at the hotel, and Yancey was about to put the pedal to the Shelby embossed floor mat when Skeet hollered,
"We got company!"
The warrior spirit rode toward them, the stallion at full gallop, another spear at the ready.
"How the hell did he get in front of us?"
The question went amiss. Yancey took the center of the road and gunned it.
"What are we doing, pard?"
Again, the question went unanswered. With laser focus, he bared down on the Palomino and its rider. A second before impact, the stallion leapt. Time seemed to slow as the magnificent creature sailed over their heads.
"That's something you don't see every day," Skeet thought.
"Look out!"
A panic-stricken voice came from the back seat. Yancey spun the wheel, causing the car to slide sideways into the dilapidated water tower. The impact sent Yancey flying over the center console. When Yancey came to, he wondered why he was sprawled across Skeet's lap. He sat up, rubbing the knot on the top of his head, and their eyes met.
I told you, pal, there's enough Skeeter sauce to go around.
Skeet smiled.
That ain't even a little bit funny,
Yancey groaned as he maneuvered back into the driver's seat. The rickety scaffold that held up the water tower made a resounding crack and began to collapse.
Time to go, Eskimo!
The voice came from the back seat again. Luckily, the car was still running, so all Yancey had to do was stomp on the throttle and they were forced back into their seats. Behind them, the water tower fell into the street and exploded into a million toothpicks. Everyone watched in awe as the dust roiled.
Unreal, banana peel!
This time, the voice came from the front seat. Yancey shot Skeet a what-the-fuck look.
What? It's addicting!
An instant later, the warrior burst out of the bedlam at speed.
Holy shit, this guy doesn't know when to quit,
Skeet said. That started the wheels turning in Yancey's brain. In a moment of clarity, he spun the wheel and took a hard left.
Wrong way, Skeet hollered.
I've got a plan, Yancey answered.
Remembering where the pissed-off Wraith came from, he yelled,
We've got to go back.
A loud thunk came from the back of the car. Skeet watched as the spirit, who was now holding a bow, notched another arrow.
Get down, boys,
he ordered. The boys sank low as another arrow slammed into the trunk. Back at the sweat lodge, Wally threw two armfuls of pinion and a couple armfuls of sage on the fire. White smoke rose into the afternoon sky. Yancey pointed.
Good old Wally.
They felt something that could almost pass for hope. The engine sounded like it was on life support when they wheeled up to the sweat lodge.
It's right behind us,
Skeet hollered as he climbed over the mangled door.
Boys, go wait in the sweat lodge, Wally instructed. Skeeter, Yancey, stay behind me. No earthly weapon can defeat the evil one, but we can send it back to the spirit realm with prayer.
Sounds good to me,
Skeet said, taking his place behind Wally. Yancey walked over to the fire pit and picked up the pitchfork.
That won't do you any good, Wally warned.
Yancey didn't answer, nor did he move. A distant battle cry announced the spirit's approach.
This is it,
Wally said, raising his staff. Suddenly, the fire flared up as the warrior burst forth from the flames. Wally turned and stumbled to the ground. Yancey backed away from the scalding hot flames while Skeeter helped Wally to his feet. The warrior spirit raised his hand and a spear appeared. This time, the spear was adorned with a single eagle feather. Yancey drew back and hurled the pitchfork with all his might. His heart sank as the pitchfork passed through the warrior's visage with no more resistance than a shadow. Yancey had no time to react when the warrior threw the spear. He fell to his back and lay still with the spear buried deep in his chest.
No!
Skeeter screamed.
Oh, God, no!
He felt the energy drain from his body. At that moment, he had no desire to go on. The warrior let go a long, high-pitched cry. The overwhelming feeling of dread that had enveloped Skeeter's soul turned to rage. Without thinking, he turned and bull-rushed the evil son of a bitch. The warrior raised his hand and produced a tomahawk, also adorned with a single eagle feather, and let it fly. Skeeter's forward momentum stopped. He dropped to his knees and then onto his back. With no show of emotion, the warrior dismounted and walked to Yancey's lifeless body. He took the spear and with a quick, almost effortless twist, snapped the spearhead off just below the jagged wound. The long wooden shaft dissolved into nothingness. Then the warrior turned and knelt at Skeeter's side. A quick thrust with the palm of his hand snapped the flint head of the tomahawk, leaving a jagged shard embedded deep in Skeeter's chest. Again, the remains of the weapon disappeared. The warrior stood and turned. Wally stood between him and his horse. He raised his hand and smiled as the warrior approached. The warrior raised his hand and spoke in the ancient language of their people. When he was finished, Wally bowed as the warrior passed through him. He turned around as the warrior vanished. Wally had the boys help carry Yancey's, then Skeeter's bodies into the sweat lodge and lay them on the soft sheepskins. When the sun sank below the horizon, Wally covered the bodies with woven blankets and started a small fire. A short time later, Duncan pulled up in Wally's truck, followed by a law enforcement truck. When Duncan and the tribal officer entered the lodge, Wally was sat facing the east, eyes closed and praying softly. The officer knelt at the first man's body and checked for a pulse, then went to the second man and held his finger on his carotid artery. The officer turned to Duncan and shook his head.
Billy Todachini, it is good to see you, Wally said.
Now that Wally was done praying, the young officer had about a dozen questions that needed answered. But since Wally was a tribal elder, and the main reason he decided to serve his community in the best way he knew how, he tendered his words with respect.
Mr. stands at the door. It is good to see you. Tell me what happened here.
Wally stirred the fire and put on another pinion branch before answering.
An ancient prophecy has begun. These warriors are being prepared.
He pointed at the two bodies.
These men are dead,
Billy said, expecting at the very least to see a look of surprise. Wally's sanguine smile struck a nerve, and the officer had to remind himself who he was talking to.
Mister stands at the door. Do you realize you could be arrested for not reporting two murders?
There was a stirring sound. Billy almost went for his gun when Skeeter sat up, gasping for air.
Where is that son of a bitch?
He hollered, ready for round two. Then Yancey raised up on one elbow, yawning like he had just had the best sleep of his life.
You fellas won't believe the dream I just had.
He scratched his chest and felt something that hadn't been there before. He sat up and stared over the bridge of his nose. The scar had healed and now looked like the remnant of some childhood accident.
Skeet?
Skeet felt a solid mass under his own scar.
Yeah, I don't think that was a dream, pard.
The two boys laid back in the reclined seats of the Mustang, watching shooting stars streak across the night sky until sheer exhaustion overcame them and they drifted off. Things were a lot more chaotic in the sweat lodge. Everyone had questions that they were all asking at once. Wally decided it would be easiest to address all of them at once. He raised a hand and everyone respectfully closed their squawk boxes. He began by telling them that there had been no evil spirit, which raised a few eyebrows. The one they battled was actually one of the holy people. Duncan, eager to show he was up to speed, said,
So the holy people were testing these crazy-ass?
He decided the joke had run its course. These two, he corrected, were up for the job. Skeet ran a finger across his scar.
Well, I guess we failed that test.
Wally smiled like he had good news.
The holy people are satisfied with their choice.
He pointed.
Yancey, you have demonstrated that you are willing to fight against impossible odds. And Skeeter, you have shown that you will sacrifice everything to protect the ones you love.
Skeet wrinkled his nose at Yancey and said under his breath,
In a manly sort of way.
Wally went on,
The next time you face the evil one, he will be prepared and the battle will be much harder.
Oh, great, Yancey said. I came here to get rid of my nightmares, not make them worse.
Yancey, Skeeter,
The venerable old medicine man shook his finger at both of them.
To be chosen by the holy people, to protect all of mankind, is a great honor. You must prepare yourselves physically, mentally, emotionally, and most of all, spiritually. Share the teachings you have learned here and learn to walk the beauty way path. Enjoy the time you have been given with your families and friends, and do not fear the evil one. No matter what happens, we will see each other in the fourth world.
After all the next level shit they'd seen, they had no problem believing Wally's words. Since Baldwin was already in the driver's seat, Yancey let him drive the car back to Wally's house, and they caught a few hours of shut-eye before sunup. Over eggs and bacon and coffee black enough to curl most men's toes, the officer filled out a police report. Other than the VIN number and description of the car, the rest of the report read like a P.G. Wodehouse novel. When he was finished, he signed it and passed it to Yancey, who read the important part out loud.
2024 blue and white Shelby Mustang, serial number yada yada yada, was stolen by unknown individuals. It was later found in its present condition, so don't flick Mr. Tannehill any shit. You should have been a poet, Yancey said.
A few minutes later, they said their goodbyes to Duncan and Wally, and the boys followed them to the car. Baldwin shook their hands, saying,
"Return to sender, chicken tender."
Then Max chimed in, saying,
"Take it easy, Mac and Cheesy."
Skeeter said they'd be listening for them on the radio, and the boys beamed like they had just won their first Grammy. As they eased down the driveway, Yancey reached out a hand to wave at a prairie dog that stood at the side of the road.
"You think those crazy-ass white guys are going to be okay?"
Duncan asked. Wally shook his head.
"I hope so. For all our sakes."
They met up with the boys in the driveway, and Duncan said,
"Let's go to my place. Damia's making fry bread and mutton chops."
And that was Spirits Among the Mist by author Lynn Jenkins. A good reminder that Lynn Jenkins' books are free on Kindle Unlimited, and he could use a few reviews if you'd be so kind. Just use the link in the show notes and you'll find them all scrolling down. Hey, a little about the author. Lynn Jenkins is a retired oil field hand from Vernal, Utah. He writes to honor his older brother Jim, who was called back to his maker far too soon. Those who were lucky enough to have known Jim might recognize the resemblance to Skeeter Boland. And that's because he's loosely based on Jim, so you can imagine the wild-ass adventures they had. You can find Lynn's books on Amazon Books, Google Play Books, and Apple Books. He thanks you for your support. Thanks, Lynn. Always a pleasure.
And do old Drew Blood a favor, would you? Subscribe to his podcast wherever you do your listening and leave him a 5-star review and a kind word, even if you're listening on YouTube. He needs soldiers on all fronts to win this battle, and he appreciates it. To hear a premium ad-free edition of tonight's and all the other episodes, visit simplyscarypodcast.com today and click Patrons in the upper menu. You'll find yourself at ChillingTalesForDarkNights.com, where you can become a patron for as little as $5 per month and get access to their entire audio archive, all ad-free and available to download or stream. Thank you for your time and for supporting our sponsors. When you support our sponsors, you support this show. If you happen to use Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or YouTube, you can follow and subscribe to Chilling Tales for Dark Nights there, where you'll get all the latest updates and new releases and have the chance to interact with them each and every week. Oh, and you can find Drew Blood on Facebook and Instagram, and sometimes Twitter. The Drew Blood's Dark Tales podcast is accepting submissions, friend. If you've got a story or two you'd like to be featured on the show, send it to drewbloodhorror@gmail.com. If selected, you'll get the full treatment. 10 bananas.
Well, I'm afraid this is where we part ways, at least till next week. So grab a drink for the road, friend, because before you know it, it'll be like a sweat lodge out there. A big hello and welcome to all my new patrons. Hey, y'all, I really appreciate the support. Every little bit helps. And if you've ever wanted to support me or what I do to help make it all possible, go to patreon.com/Drew Blood. Become a patron and help feed Chester, y'all. He's a big eater, that skelly prick. So may the wind be at your back, friends, and may the road rise up to meet you. And until next time, as the tribal elders say, go fuck yourselves. I don't think they really say that, but seriously, go fuck yourself.
Moro Casino, America's social casino.
Welcome to Moto Casino, where the excitement never ends, with thousands of the hottest free-to-play social casino games, fastest payouts, and the best promotions in the industry. No tricks or gimmicks. Owned and operated in the USA.
Moto Casino is a free-to-play social casino. No purchase necessary. 21 plus to play. Void where prohibited.
Sign up today for a generous welcome bonus.
Moto Casino, America's social casino.
Download the Moto Casino app today.